This is John Summers Flanagan, and welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast, the podcast that everyone who wants to be a practically perfect parent listens to.
Hi, and I'm Sarah Polinchek. I need to be listening to this podcast this week because I haven't felt practically perfect lately, so this is good.
Okay, well, we're going to get into that groove. Today's show, Sarah, is titled Get Curious, Not Furious, Discipline Again and Again and Some More. Why do we need any more discipline?
Oh, we need so much. Discipline, it's just, it underlies the foundation of everything we do. I just don't think we can have enough of it. I really don't.
I think discipline is especially important because it's also not only discipline for our children, but our own self-discipline. And we need to model that over and over, again and again, and some more
totally.
For our children.
Even though, you know, as I started out by saying that I haven't had a practically perfect parenting week, these reviews over and over and over again, they help me. You know, we're supposed to be the experts supposedly on this topic, but oh my gosh, this stuff is hard. Parenting is hard. And yeah. I could use the review just as much as anybody.
I hope you and the listeners realize that the title of this podcast, Practically Perfect Parenting, is kind of a joke. It's because no one can really be a perfect parent. And in fact, trying to be practically perfect is sort of silly.
It is.
But we should all try to keep getting better and better. Which reminds me that I should say thank you to the Charles Engelhard Foundation and to NPEN, the National Parenting Education Network, for generously supporting and sponsoring these podcasts.
Yes, thank you to those organizations. So, you know, in the past, we've defined discipline, we've reviewed the three types of parenting, and we've talked about character feedback and special time, but today is a little different. How's that?
Well, you know, discipline, it's all about being able to enact it. And so today, part of our focus is on what gets in the way. What are the obstacles that get in the way of us enacting the kind of discipline strategies that are better than the ones that we might enact if we don't stop and reflect?
Right.
Now, also, I have an old friend who used to joke, and one of his big jokes was the Department of Redundancy Department, which is kind of silly.
I get it.
And that's what discipline feels like, but it is redundant. And I have another friend, a mental health counselor in Missoula, who always says redundancy works, meaning that repetition is important. Mm-hmm. If we don't think about things over and over again, we don't practice. Obviously, if you're a performer, you practice over and over until you get it practically perfect. So,
good points.
So anyway, one of the things, the big focus today is on a mantra. And the mantra is, remember this always, Sarah. Mm-hmm.
I got it. It's burned in my brain.
Get curious, not furious. So repeat after me.
Get curious, not furious.
So what's that all about?
Oh, gosh, so much. It's all about taking a moment to reflect, why is this happening? Instead of just responding and going to just that default reaction that we have, we're just going to respond and think about, why is this happening? Really get curious about what this behavior means to us, and we're going to be talking about that today.
Get curious and reflective. And one of the special things that children are able to do, maybe more than anyone else on the planet, is to
get
parents angry. Push buttons.
They find them.
So today we have a special guest, and the special guest's name is Meg Akabus, and she's a certified parenting educator. She's an author. She's the founder of a New York City-based Parenting Solutions organization, which really focuses on helping parents rekindle or find the joy in parenting. The book that she has written is titled 52 Weeks of Parenting Wisdom, Effective Strategies for Raising Happy, Responsible Kids. Well, hey, who doesn't want to raise happy, responsible kids? And you can find Meg's book online on Amazon or other major booksellers. Hi, Meg. My first question to you is, as a certified parenting expert, what have you found in your experience with parenting education to be some of the main obstacles that really stop or prevent parents from using healthy and positive discipline with their children?
That's a great question. I think there are several obstacles parents using positive discipline with their children, but I think the main one is that while parenting is one of the most important things that a person might do in his or her life, because how we parent really does matter, it's also one of the most difficult things we'll do, and there's so many things we need to know to do it well. So while there's not one right way to parent, not having knowledge of what strategies are effective and what strategies are ineffective can be a major obstacle. Of course, we know how we were parented, right? And
right.
We also get lots of so-called advice that's floating around out there. But really knowing about child development, how the brain works, and what research has shown us about child development, most parents don't have this information. And even if they have the information, they don't know exactly how it translates into important and effective tools for being a successful parent.
So one of the takeaways that I have from what Meg had to say is that it's so important for us to keep getting educated. You know, I think it used to be that our parents and their parents just sort of parented in the way that they were parented, right? I mean, we just mm-hmm. do what we know. But for one thing, sometimes that wasn't always optimal, right?
Right.
I had great parents, but there were some things that I would want to do a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. I think we could all say that. And there's so much education out there now that wasn't there
right.
before. So I think staying on top of that and trying to do better is just what we're trying to do. And then the other thing is that, gosh, you just talked about getting our buttons pushed, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, falling back on those just default responses when we get triggered, that's not the way that I want a parent,
yeah.
right? I want to know that I can pause and take a moment. And not just react, but be proactive and be mm-hmm. curious about what's going on.
I've had many parents who come to see me for a parenting consultation who have said their motivation was, I heard my mother's voice mm-hmm. coming out of my mouth,
mm-hmm.
or I heard my father yelling, and it was me yelling. Mm-hmm. And so that default button, the way you describe that, I think is so articulate.
Mm-hmm.
It's so accurate for we go back. If under stress, we go back to a certain point
yep.
in time and we can repeat some good things our parents did, but you know, one of our jobs is to be continually improving.
And just to be aware, am I just doing this automatically or am I aware and doing this intentionally, right?
Okay.
So this reminds me of a theory from Rudolf Dreikers about why kids misbehave. So there are four goals that he talks about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Goals of misbehavior.
Exactly.
So what are those?
The four goals, and we're going to say them over and over again today to try to just pound them into our own and other people's brains.
Yes.
And the first one is one that we all know, and that is kids misbehave because their goal is attention. Some people have expanded that to attention and contact.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I remember I just recently saw a boy who's so attention-oriented, and I could just see him looking at me, like wanting more and more and more contact.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
The second goal of misbehavior is power and control. I want it the way I want it. You know, children are like all of us. They want what they want, and they will try their best to get it their way. And sometimes in less socially appropriate ways than adults, although sometimes not. The third goal of misbehavior is revenge or retaliation. It's like, well, Sarah, you're my mom, and you wouldn't let me do something I wanted to do. And so, as a consequence, I'm going to get you back one way or another. I might say I hate you.
Mm.
I might do something really mean and nasty. And the fourth is the most complicated, maybe the hardest to understand, but I do think it operates in mostly in extreme circumstances. And that is sometimes children display inadequacy and that the goal of their behavior is to get help. And so they act overwhelmed or they say they can't do it or they actually do believe they can't do it, that they're not competent to courageously attack the tasks in their lives. And so they back off, they withdraw, they display inadequacy, and then hope that a parent or an adult figure will step in and take care of it for them.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, the nice thing about understanding these four goals or what kids are trying to achieve with this misbehavior is that we have some clues. We have some really good ways of trying to figure out which one of those four it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's by paying attention and tuning in to how we're feeling when
right.
our kids are displaying any one of these, you know, categorical groups of behaviors. The first one, so attention and contact, I am familiar with this one.
You've experienced it.
I have. I do on a daily basis. But so if you're feeling that, gosh, I just feel annoyed. I just feel a little bugged. I'm questioning, am I giving this kid enough? So if I could just throw out a quick example. But yeah. In the morning, it just feels a little chaotic. I have a 20-minute window in there where I've got one kid. I've got to make sure he gets to the bus on time. I've got to make, does he have his food? Does he have this and this and this? I'm trying to check all these things off the list. I'm thinking about my own day. I'm thinking about my younger one. What's my husband over there doing? What's my St. Bernard doing? You know what I mean? There's so much going on in my head. And my 11-year-old, this is when he wants to sing at the top of his lungs and be by me and kind of be showing me his moves. And it's great, but I find myself feeling bugged and annoyed, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good time to really realize, okay, what is he needing? What's he doing? And if I can take 1 minute and give him a little attention, it buys me another 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, great example.
Yeah, that's tough. So the next one, when kids are seeking power and control, often we can check in with ourselves and feel like we're feeling a little challenged. We're feeling kind of angry, some forceful feelings coming out in us. And that's
I'm going to show this kid.
Right. That's indicative of a power struggle that's going on. And then revenge. So when that one is coming up, I can tune into myself and know that I'm feeling a little bit hurt. I think that if a kid told me that they hated me, I would feel hurt. And if I can take a moment and reflect on that. Scared, disappointed, concerned about the connection we're having in our relationship, right?
Yeah, it's sort of this core feeling of being hurt and threatened, I think. Yeah, and I think it can happen when kids are out to get us back.
Right, right. And then finally, the one that you talked about, displaying inadequacy. Gosh, if I feel guilty that I'm not doing enough or really manipulated, I think it's a good sign that that's what's going on. And it's tricky. I think the good thing, this is a little bit hard, right, to figure out sometimes, but I want to remind our listeners that we have a tip sheet on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's good to practice this and really take a moment to be reflective, and because tuning into what we're feeling when faced with any of these different behaviors can really help point to what is driving that behavior. And
right.
When we know that, then we know which solution.
Right.
Focus on or which strategy.
And of course, we move next to the solutions and the strategies, and they won't always work.
Right.
I mean, sometimes we do this reflective process and we think, oh, I'm feeling bugged and annoyed, and it must be attention. I got to figure out a way to address that. And, you know, we try to, and then it still doesn't work. On the other hand, I mean, even though that's disappointing, on the other hand, I also think it's a good process because, of course, parenting is an experiment.
Right.
And we have to try out some different things. And so back through those four goals of misbehavior, the first one being attention. One of the things that might help is special time.
Yes. And luckily for our listeners, we talked about special time pretty thoroughly in our one of our recent episodes called Discipline Number 2.
Right.
Podcast. And then we also have tip sheets on special time. That's a very effective way to respond to the attention-seeking behavior.
Yeah, I love special time. So that's something about, you know, if the child needs attention, you can schedule it. Sometimes that's much better. Or like in your situation, you may recognize, oh, I need 21 minutes to take care of this stuff in the morning, and I know I'm going to have to spend a minute listening and to my son sing and watching him dance, and that's going to be a good connection.
Right.
And of course, you want to be careful. You don't want to pay attention to the negative attention-seeking behavior. You want to systematically try to pay attention with kids who are attention seekers to their positive behaviors. And dancing and singing, mostly pretty positive.
I have to remember that. That's happening.
Yeah. So power and control. You know, one of the strategies, lifelong strategy for me and my parenting is give choices, give choices, give more choices, give reasonable choices, limited choices, but give choices. And so let's listen to our expert today, Meg, talk about giving choices.
Excellent.
So one very effective tool I find to use with young children is to proactively give young children choices throughout their day. So this doesn't sound like a discipline tool, but it actually turns into a discipline tool because it's a teaching tool. Children, especially toddlers, are trying to gain some control over their own little world. But unfortunately, we often give them control about things they shouldn't have control about. So with very young children, asking them questions dozens of times throughout the day is really helpful. So questions like, do you want me to read you this book or that book? Do you want to wear your red socks or your blue socks? Would you like your cheese in slices or in chunks?
Mm-hmm.
Should we play hide and seek first or should we do a puzzle? Do you want to hold daddy's hand or mommy's hand when we cross the street? Now, these may seem very silly, giving your child all these sort of arbitrary things to make choices about, but they're not so arbitrary to a child. And giving your child acceptable choices gives your child a feeling of power so that when you tell them they need to do something, then they'll more easily comply. It won't be a power struggle because you've given them choices about a lot of things already. And then it won't be so difficult to tell them that now you need to put your shoes on.
Now, I also want to mention that we should keep in mind that sometimes parents actually set kids up to seek power and control. And we can do that accidentally. And sometimes we do that because we feel like we need to be forceful and really kind of get into a power and control struggle. And there are ways to stay out of that. But here's Meg again offering some tips on how to make the distinction between when we need to tell our child to do something and when we want to ask our child or give choices.
It, this is, you know, a classic problem, but we see parents fall into it all the time. It's just a habit of asking our children to do things that they don't have a choice about. So saying, you know, Susie, can you get ready to go now? Is a question. It's not an instruction. If the child doesn't have a choice about going, then we need to say, it's ready. It's time to go now. Let's get ready to go now. And not use a question tone of voice and not to ask a question. So parents focusing on that and getting into the habit of not asking the child, because it's confusing for a child when they're given a choice about something, they hear it as a question, and then they don't do it because they've heard they have a choice. And of course, the parent's angry and frustrated, and you know, there's all a power struggle that goes on. And this is a very easy shift to make if you just focus on it, and it's so effective in being clear about when children have choices and when they don't.
So the third goal of misbehavior, again, is revenge. And a lot of times revenge comes from a core disappointment or hurt that the child, your child, experienced. Now, if your child experienced some hurt, then she or he may want to get you back for that. Mm-hmm. One of the ways that we can try to address it and mitigate it is by attending to the emotions and the hurt and the disappointment that your child is experiencing. Mm-hmm. So you've said no to something. It's important to be compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
No is much easier to handle when it comes from someone who has some empathy and compassion.
And, you know, I think that's such an important one that I think, John, that we should plan to have another episode talking about that at some point, because the emotion coaching piece is so big.
Yes. And so we are going to have another episode
on
that. We've made the commitment right
okay.
here. And so the fourth of the goals of misbehavior to display inadequacy, you know, it really is important because if you sense that that's the goal of your child's behavior, that would suggest your child feels incompetent
mm-hmm.
or is acting in a manipulative way to get you to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really need to empower children who are in that experience, who are having that experience, who are seeking that goal. And we need to help them step by step, maybe make small progress toward a tiny goal.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, the goals that our children have are so big that they can't see any way to get to them.
Right. We need to slice it thin for them, right?
Yep.
So that
Very
they can
thin.
Feel just even the smallest successes and then build on that.
Yep. And so then we would systematically pay attention to and support the child's small steps toward the goal or mm-hmm. small successes. We want to point out the successes. We want to point out the competencies,
mm-hmm.
link them, and say, oh, I see you did that. That means you have this skill.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
I want to just add to one of the most important things about that is that they really need to feel it. They have to have the success. It doesn't do any good for us to say, oh, but you're such a good kid, right?
Right, right.
I mean, that doesn't really mean much. I mean, really breaking it down that, gosh, I saw you really struggle with XYZ, and that looked really hard, and you did it.
Yeah.
You persevered. Being really specific, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. That's a basic truth about parenting.
Mm-hmm.
The more specific we can be in our feedback, the better. Hey, guess what it's time for now?
Money tips.
Yeah. Cha-ching.
Yeah.
So what do you got that's worth $100?
I just want to highlight, I really liked a lot of the things that Meg said. I want to highlight that just pausing and taking a moment, it's hard. I keep saying that. We're in the episode of repetition, I guess. I keep saying that. But this is really hard stuff.
Yeah.
Reacting, it's just kind of what we do, right? We're in a fast-paced culture. It's just easy to react. But taking a moment, there's nothing wrong with telling our kid even, you know what, I don't like what I just saw, and I need to take a moment and think about it, and I'm going to come back to this in a second. We don't lose or diminish any of our power when we let our kids know we're thinking. In fact, we're modeling really good decision-making and self-control when we do that, right?
I was going to say that, but you just said it.
I stole it. Yeah, so I think just that pausing and reflecting and, again, being curious about what's going on.
Yeah. So my $100 tip is this: stay the course. Recognize that life and parenting is an experiment. Don't be discouraged. If you don't have success or you're disappointed in the way something that you're doing is working, part of staying the course is to say, I'm still going to remain invested in being the best disciplinarian I can be. And we know from previous shows that means the best teacher, the best teacher of the kinds of skills and values that I want my child to grow up with. So I would just say to parents, hang in there, stay the course, but also stay the course with compassion, because if you don't have compassion, you are going to lose some of those kids. They are not going to want to learn from you.
And I would add compassion for yourself too, right? Because we're going to make so many mistakes along the way. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Right?
I remember both of them I made when I was parenting. No, that was a joke. So many.
Ooh, that was good.
It's time for some resources.
I would go to the John Summers Flanagan website, and that's where you're going to find really good descriptors of some of the things we've talked about today on his tip sheets.
You're very nice. And I do have one on the goals of misbehavior. And so that, just in case you can't remember those four goals of misbehavior that we're going to say again and again and again, you can read about them too. So Meg's book is available. It is available on Amazon, other large booksellers. The title is 52 Weeks of Parenting Wisdom, Effective Strategies for Raising Happy, Responsible Kids. And I recommend it. I think it's great, and I know one of the things that she likes to say is that you need at least a week to focus on a bit of wisdom or a new strategy as parents. And so you can look at one, and you can focus on it for a week, and then move to another one.
Sounds good.
Or you could make it last 2 years. Focus on it for 2 weeks.
Whatever you need to do.
And now it's time, as always, for us to sign off and say goodbye. And again, I want to thank the Engelhard Foundation. I want to say there are more resources also at npen.org, npen.org. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. And our mantra, get curious, not furious.
Yes. Good job remembering.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Engelhard Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.